days suffice. But, having finished the day's work, what do you do with those other 8 hours? Let's say you go home to your family. What sort of family are you raising? Will the children ever be exposed to a reasonably penetrating idea at home? Will you be presiding over a family that maintains some contact with the great democratic intellect? Will there be a book in the house? Will there be a painting a reasonably sensitive man can look at without shuddering? Will the kids ever get to hear Bach? That is about what I said, but this particular pest was not interested. Look, he said, you professors raise your kids your way, I'll take care of my own. Me, I'm out to make money. I hope you make a lot of it, I told him, because you're going to be badly stuck for something to do when you're not signing checks. 14 years later, I am still teaching, and I am here to tell you that the business of the college is not only to train you, but to put you in touch with what the best human minds have thought. If you have no time for Shakespeare, for a basic look at philosophy, for the continuity of the fine arts, for that lesson of man's development we call history, then you have no business being in college. You are on your way to being that new species of mechanized savage, the push-button Neanderthal. Our colleges inevitably graduate a number of such life forms, but it cannot be said that they went to college. Rather, the college went through them, without making contact. No one gets to be a human being unaided. There is not time enough in a single lifetime to invent for oneself everything one needs to know in order to be a civilized human. Assume, for example, that you want to be a physicist. You pass the great stone halls of, say, MIT, and there, cut into the stone, are the names of the scientists. The chances are that few, if any of you, will leave your names to be cut into those stones. Yet any of you who manage to stay awake through part of a high school course in physics knows more about physics than did many of those great scholars of the past. You know more because they left you what they knew, because you can start from what the past learned for you. And as this is true of the techniques of mankind, so it is true of mankind's spiritual resources. Most of these resources, both technical and spiritual, are stored in books. Books are man's peculiar accomplishment. When you have read a book, you have added to your human experience. Read Homer, and your mind includes a piece of Homer's mind. Through books you can acquire at least fragments of the mind and experience of Virgil, Dante, Shakespeare, the list is endless. For a great book is necessarily a gift. It offers you a life you have not the time to live yourself, and it takes you into a world you have not the time to travel in literal time. A civilized mind is, in essence, one that contains many such lives and many such worlds. If you are too much in a hurry or too arrogantly proud of your own limitations to accept as a gift to your humanity some pieces of the minds of Aristotle or Chaucer or Einstein, you are neither a developed human nor a useful citizen of a democracy. I think it was La Rochefoucauld. He might have said that no one would ever manage to become human if they hadn't read about it. I speak, I'm sure, for the faculty of the Liberal Arts College, and for the faculties of the specialized schools as well, when I say that a university has no real existence and no real purpose except as it succeeds in putting you in touch, both as specialists and as humans, with those human minds your human brain needs to include, the faculty, by its very existence, says implicitly, we have been aided by many people and by many books in our attempt to make ourselves some sort of storehouse of human experience. We are here to make available to you, as best we can, that expertise.